What we are doing this coming Sunday, we are going to put out in the middle of the intersection of Broadmoor and Nash what is referred to as a mini roundabout. And we're going to do it in temporary fashion using sandbags and cones and traffic drums and portable signs. And that gives us an ability to, if you will, try it before you buy it. And it gives us the ability to kind of tweak the design a little bit to see if it's working well or if we could do something different. And then if everything, and we think everything will go okay, but, you know, we can take what we learn from that and look at going into a permanent design, which we anticipate could happen next summer in advance of the apartments opening. There is a notable number of apartments. We've had a number of conversations with residents of the area there. They are concerned. You know, it was at least originally age-restricted community, and folks are concerned about traffic safety and just the ability to walk along and across the street, and if they want to walk their pets or with their grandchildren or whatever. And we want to help them enjoy that expectation.
Does the temporary roundabout leave a lot of the concerns from the residents in Briar Meadows?
The folks we have visited with, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. They are concerned about traffic just coming straight out of the apartments and headed south down Broadmoor. So putting the roundabout there kind of moderates that. I can't do a straight shot out. I've got to actually go through the roundabout at around 10 miles an hour. Their bigger concern that we heard, and then they have the concern with people chronically running the stop sign there at Broadmoor and Trophy.
And I want to go there in a minute. I want to stay with the roundabout first, because I also want to have you talk about the trade-offs between the roundabout and doing nothing and doing signals and what other options there might be out there.
Perfect. Okay. So their concern is, and this does not address it, if you think of Broadmoor from Nash down to Trophy as a pipe, and then Trophy, you know, headed east over to Highway 6 as being another pipe, they are concerned about how fast traffic is traveling along the pipe or along the street. So these efforts don't address the midpoints of the segments where you may see higher speeds, but we are addressing the ends of the segments where you have the traffic operational issues just associated with, you know, turning effectively or stopping when you're supposed to stop, or trying to create an expectation of when you go this way, you really need to slow down and pay attention.
And what you're talking about is a more global view of things. So often we get so restricted in just the patterns that we use as far as traffic, you're extending it, saying, you know, not only is this an issue regarding Nash, this is also an issue for those who may not realize people are using Broadmoor as a shortcut.
That's exactly right, and that's why the program is not referred to as, quote, traffic calming. It is referred to as local area traffic management. And for an example of how broadly we view it, we know that there is an issue with eastbound traffic on William J. Bryan wanting to turn right and go south on Highway 6, and that backs up all the way through Nash, through Broadmoor, and we realize something needs to happen there as well as part of the overall system.
And unfortunately, the way things were developed in that area, Broadmoor was not designed nor could be designed now as anything more than it is, unless you take out one side of the street and plow those houses down and expand Broadmoor.
Well, I mean, there is not really a need to do that, because a lot of people have the belief that the more lanes you have more, quote, more mobility. And they see that as just simply moving cars at speed. But in reality, the throughput of a corridor is not defined by the number of lanes. It's defined by the efficiency of its intersections. So, you know, if you were in Houston after Hurricane Ike, we had 4, 6, 8-lane roadways where the traffic signals were dark because they had no power. And those 8 lanes were nothing but a parking lot. So what we look at in terms of trying to make roadways and intersections efficient is, what can we do to moderate travel speeds so that folks are in reasonable conformance with the speed limit What can we do to simplify intersections? What can we do to change the perception of the context of the street by the driver so that their driving behaviors change, hopefully for the better?
Using your sequence, let's again review Broadmoor, what's being proposed, at least initially, at the intersection with Trophy, that's designed to try to achieve some of those goals.
Broadmoor and Trophy?
Yes.
Yes.
When you're putting the bulbs in there.
The bulb outs are there to give us a chance to tighten up that intersection and to where the stop signs are now outside the curb and kind of far to the right as you're approaching. And we think that's contributing to people just not seeing it and stopping. You still have scoff laws or people who are just not paying attention, texting or whatever. But by creating the bulb outs, we're going to put the stop signs within those bulb outs. So they are definitely more in your face as a driver. You're going to be harder pressed to say, I didn't see it. And we'll also be adding the double yellow down the middle for about 75 or 100 feet and the big white stop bar, which is not there now. So just trying to give a lot of additional visual cues to the motorist. I need to pay attention and I need to be watching this traffic control device and stop for it.
And then continuing Broadmoor to the west to Nash, the idea of the roundabout versus signals or additional turn lanes or other options, why was the roundabout chosen?
Well, what we know right now, you've got four lanes along Nash and you have a two-lane Broadmoor that approaches from the south and it has a left turn lane and a right turn lane. And just Broadmoor has the stop sign. So Nash traffic goes back and forth very freely. Broadmoor, if you're headed, if you want to turn left and go down Broadmoor, if you're coming north on Broadmoor, you want to turn left or right, there's a lot of delay associated with that. When the apartments go in and their driveway becomes the fourth leg of that intersection, it's very reasonable to anticipate from a traffic engineering standpoint that that intersection will then want a higher level of control, and that will probably be a four-way stop. And here's the challenge with four-way stops, because you always have to stop no matter what's going on. There's a lot of delay associated with it, and four-way stops are even less efficient when you have multiple lanes you're trying to watch because you're trying to figure, okay, whose turn is it? So just some quick rules of thumb, a single lane or of traffic, of roadway, a single lane of roadway, assuming no driveways, no intersections, no parked cars, can process up to 1,900 vehicles per hour. So if Broadmoor were just a perfectly smooth pipe with no driveways, no houses, no parked cars, no anything, has the capacity to process up to 3,800 vehicles an hour in both directions. In reality, that doesn't occur because you do have all of those items which add friction. But when you come to an all-way stop, its best efficiency is about 400 vehicles per hour per approach. And then again, the more lanes you have approaching, the less efficient it is because, again, you're trying to guess who's going, in the right lane and left lane, et cetera. A traffic signal will process up to about 600 vehicles per hour per approach lane. Even, quote, perfectly timed and all the technology you can bring to bear, all things considered, a signal will process about a third of what a roadway can feed it. So it's like you go down to Home Depot and you buy a big pipe and you buy a little bitty valve to go on the end of it. A roundabout, on the other hand, has the potential to process up to about 1,200 vehicles per hour per approach lane. So a single-lane roundabout can be far more efficient than a traffic signal and is definitely more efficient than an all-way stop. And what else we know about roundabouts is they are safer than traditional intersections. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety did a study a number of years back and found that properly designed roundabouts can reduce the risk of all crashes by about 40%. They can reduce the risk of injury crashes by about 70%, and they reduce the risk of fatal crashes by about 90%. And, Bill, I don't have another tool in my toolbox that is that good. We talked about the roundabout being more efficient versus a signal or an all-way stop. Their design is very flexible. So a lot of places, you know, just like Broadmoor and Nash, we can be innovative and creative with our design and get it to fit within those confines. We can also do other things at other intersections if we need to not center it on the intersection. It can be offset to one side or the other. You can scooch it around or whatever that you need to do to balance other issues or concerns at the intersection. They serve well all roadway users, pedestrians, bicyclists, transit riders, motorists, regardless of age or ability. And in fact, AARP has endorsed roundabouts because they find that 40% of crashes at intersections are involving people 65 and over, and the worst ones of those are those right-angle crashes. So roundabouts slow down the intersection so that everything's processing in the 10 to 15 to 20 mile an hour range, depending on the size and design of the roundabout. It simplifies the operation because all I'm doing is pulling to a yield sign. I look to the left for a gap, and then I go. And as a pedestrian, with the crossings pulled one vehicle length back, I can do one thing at a time. I can make eye contact with the driver, cross that lane, make eye contact with the next driver, cross that lane. So it really breaks down the complexity of trying to get across the street. And finally, Bill, roundabouts give us the ability to create community gateways or focal points. So, you know, whether it's landscaping, public art, you know, something that says, you know, this is our community, welcome to our community, or something that just as you're driving down the street, it says, hey, you're entering a new place or a different place, consider adjusting your driving behaviors because you've, quote, come in the door of the house, if you will. Am I making sense?
Yes. And to a degree, you're preaching to the choir because I've been in communities and states that have lots of roundabouts and at locations where there's a heavy traffic volume, which is where I was going to next, because Brian has roundabouts, but this would be a location handling the most traffic in a roundabout, so it's going to be a culture change.
Could be a little bit, and again, that's a good reason to do the temporary on the front end. You know, if you're going to go to an intersection and we're going to, you know, do a lot of construction work and place concrete and asphalt and permanent things, that's, you know, saying, okay, we know what's going to be right for here. And for some communities, that's a lot to kind of bite off on the front end. So by doing the temporary roundabout gives us the ability to kind of test drive it, if you will, for the community to kind of better understand it. And, you know, when we do have the ability to do temporary things, it just works better with the public because if they do have comments, it's not, quote, cast in concrete that, you know, we can hear those and make different decisions. And, you know, Bill, in fairness, the decision at the end of this may be this thing doesn't work here. But that's okay. We're at least trying something.
The news release does talk about receiving public input on this. How will motorists and others go about doing that?
The city has a website that, you know, through the website, you can email your comments to us. They can call me, then call the city's general number. I mean, if you want to show up and just visit or you want to drop a letter in the mail or something like that, whatever it is, we'd love to hear from you.
And this is going to be a 2 to 4 week endeavor with the temporary?
At Broadmoor and Nash, yes. Broadmoor and Trophy, we have a lot more confidence with. We're using slightly less temporary devices, if you will. They're flexible posts that actually stick to the pavement. And those we're going to probably leave until we can, unless there's something really unforeseen. We're going to probably leave those there until we actually can put some concrete out there and replace them because it's too much of a safety issue there with people running the stop sign to put it out for a little bit and then pick it up and take our toys home.
While the news release addresses these two locations specifically, what else is being considered right now?
At this time, nothing else. This will mark the mini roundabout at Broadmoor and Nash will mark the sixth roundabout or circular intersection within the city limits of Bryan. College Main and Old College, the one on Main Street downtown. There are three to the west, to the east of Highway 6. One's in the big, in the Target Shopping Center, so it's more of a private property feature than a public roadway. But then there is one on a public road just to the north of Briarcrest. And then back in, I've drawn a blank on the name of the development there, by the clubhouse on the golf course further east down Boonville.
That'd be Miramont.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. There's one there. That's that roundabout is on city public right of way.
What else have I missed that listeners need to know about these two projects specifically, or the whole concept generally?
Bill, a couple of things. We are, and you saw at council, where we are looking at the concept of local area traffic management for speeding mitigation citywide. Where we have those links, or if they're not up yet, will be available on our website. We do ask people to go there. The draft policies and procedures is there for people to read through. Yes, it is a lot to read, but it represents a body of experience that goes back into the early 1990s with traffic calming. And it's a pretty objective and comprehensive, and I think a competent program that people will always know where they stand. If I ask for something on my street, yes or no, we can tell you what's going on at any given point in time.
And let me butt in for just a second, because we've used the phrase traffic calming a few times. People may not be familiar with the phrase. If you could give us a layman's definition.
Traffic calming, in layman's term, is physically modifying a roadway to change drivers' behaviors. We see frequently that roadways are designed more more auto-centric, but they go through people-centric places, so you get a mismatch of functionality where, you know, we have, going by parks and through neighborhoods, a street that people feel comfortable driving at 35, 40, 45 miles an hour because of the way the street is designed and the way the land use is as well, with the houses set way far back and whatnot and no on-street parking. We really need to bring in, unfortunately, a retrofit to better align the functionality of the street with the adjacent land uses. In new developments, we're looking to apply those concepts of traffic calming, or the geometric street features as they're technically known, in the actual design of the street. So looking at narrower streets, looking at introducing roundabouts and bulb outs and splitter islands, et cetera, as part of the design of the new street. So that when people are moving in and the houses are being built, the street looks and feels different than what they may be used to elsewhere, and hopefully we see more appropriate driver behaviors while the kiddos are playing in the front yard.
A little while ago, you made the reference to Houston. I heard in your presentation to the city council, you also have experience in San Antonio, which leads me to a compare and contrast.
Austin.
Excuse me. So with Austin and Houston, compare and contrast to Bryan, the similarities and the differences.
I think there's a little bit of both. Bryan College Station has a similarity to Austin in that it has very limited north-south big arterials. You know, you've got Highway 6, you've got Texas Avenue, you've got 2818, you got 45 way over to the west. But, I mean, those are really your only north-south avenues. Welburn Road, you know, not so much because of the congestion around A&M. And Austin is similar in that really I-35 is the only true north-south road, and then the others are just, you know, loops thereof. Bryan has a lot of similarities to Houston. The land density is similar. Houston may be a little more dense, but Houston has a nice grid, a very robust grid. Bryan does have a grid to it, has some nice bones in that regard. So you don't see, like you see over in Austin, the cul-de-sac neighborhoods and the other neighborhoods where there was a desire not to connect streets, so that, you know, we don't want them driving through our neighborhood. And what I see statistically, because I do have traffic data from Houston and from Austin from their traffic calming programs, the speeds tend to be, and we've got a few counts here in Bryan, not, you know, maybe about 35 or so, because we're relatively new at this. But the trend is the speeds statistically are kind of about the same. The volumes along the street segments, Austin is much higher. Again, they don't have the grid. Their local streets are doing a heck of a lot of work. Houston has lower volumes because they do have that very robust grid. Bryan's in the middle, but again, we have a very small sample, about 35 street segments counted over the past three or so years. Get some more traffic counts, get some more traffic data, I could see those numbers getting closer to Houston than going down toward the Houston end, then going up to the Austin end.
Thank you for letting me interrupt you. What else did you want to get to cover that listeners ought to know about?
People need to realize that coming to a roundabout, it may be new, it may be different, and the best thing that you can do is slow down, pay attention. Traffic in the circulating roadway that's in the roundabout does have right-of-way. So if you're approaching, you just need to look for a gap. And then you take the gap and you travel through slowly, and then you exit in the direction you want to go. Everything is, in effect, right-hand turns, counterclockwise around the Central Island.